Yeah, I didn't think it was clear enough. I was trying to make it more phallus-centric.
Yeah, gotta have more phallus. More phallus, more problems. Do we want more problems?
No, we want less problems. So less phallus then? No, let's still go with more phallus.
Yeah. So cheerleaders, help her out.
Welcome to I'm Trying to Think, episode 10. I'm your host, Chuck Werner, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Dave Stern. Say hello, Dave.
Hello.
I'm Trying to Think is a podcast sponsored by the Foundation Institute. Check foundation-institute.org. And you can visit I'm Trying to Think on the web at imtryingtothink.com. This is episode 10, our 10th anniversary reunion episode and clip show.
Spectacular.
Spectacular. We're going to hit a lot of people's favorite bits from previous episodes. We're going to revisit some things. I know a lot of listeners were upset when Robot Lincoln died in episode 6, but later on we will have the ghost of Robot Lincoln in the studio.
I'm excited. Looking forward to
it. We're going to recap the Portman Gilly trial from episode 4. That was a big... I know a lot of listeners had questions.
I'm going to admit, I thought up until like minute 47 that he didn't do it.
Things at the end change. And later we're going to introduce a new portmanteau of the words full and duck to describe portly waterfowl. That'll be a fun segment. But first, I want to introduce, we brought in a literary expert for this anniversary episode to try and put things in perspective. The author of the off-Broadway plays Scott Beowulf and The Importance of Being Frank, Fred Zeleny. Fred, say hi to the people.
Hello to everybody in listener world.
In listener world.
I'm afraid I left my elbow patches in the car. I hope I'll be able to still deal with literary subjects.
I don't know if that's...
I'm not going to lie, since you're wearing a short-sleeved shirt, elbow patches would have made you look like an asshole. I'm going to be blunt.
I think strap-on elbow patches may be a product that we want to sell. I mean, put the I'm Trying to Think logo on them.
Oh, yeah, for like when you're...
Yeah, when you're being an expert, but you're not dressed.
The lack of the jacket actually still enhances the knowledge.
When you're being an expert, but you're not really fully dressed for it,
right?
Strap on some elbow pad, elbow protectors. Is there a technical term for those?
No, I think it's just elbow patches. I mean...
Elbow patches?
I think that's one of those things where they just are what they are and you call them what they are.
They're actually repositories of knowledge is the official term for the elbow patch.
Yeah, you that's jack
where
you, in.
That's where you keep the knowledge, is in the elbows.
Oh.
You jack in. So, yeah, we've brought in Mr. Zeleny to really give us some perspective on the marks that we've made on society and culture in the 9 episodes we've done so far.
Yeah, this itself is number 10.
This is number 10.
You can actually trace the effect it's had on history through the last couple hundred years, though.
That's amazing.
I'm amazed. I'm surprised.
That's why we bring in these people.
Lincoln never would have been assassinated without you.
Well, I don't want to say without me. I didn't have a hand in that, but
I wasn't looking at
you. We're going to leave that alone. We're going to let him speak for himself.
I plead the fifth.
In the later segment.
I plead the fifth.
So, Dave, I wanted to ask first, let's start the show off right. What is your favorite thing that we've done so far?
I say the trial was pretty strong. That's just fond memories.
Fond memories. Around.
Closing arguments were powerful. I cried a little bit.
It's really a shame that we had to cut all that from the episode.
Yeah, it was running long. We had to trim some stuff.
Yeah, we had to trim a lot of that.
It actually adds to the impact of the piece, though. The fewer people ever actually hear a piece, the more impactful it is.
I'm amazed. I did not understand literature coming in today.
It's more conservation of impact. Much as in physics, an impact on a smaller force will have more puncturing power. Knowledge that is only shared with one person is more important.
Oh, so that whole trial segment was like it's like a stabbing someone with a pin.
That hurts.
I can only assume that it was a great piece. I haven't heard it to preserve its impact.
But my favorite part, I'm not going to lie to you, when you, Dave, when you summed up the similarities between Newton's, you know, laws of gravitation and the tax laws in Monaco, I would have never thought of that. What was that, episode three?
Might have been three, might have been two. It's been a couple weeks.
It's been a couple weeks. We've been at this a long time now.
It was in between the two. It was episode E.
I don't have statistics in front of me. I'm just kind of spitballing this from the great font of knowledge I have. I'm pretty sure only 0.0001% of podcasts make it to episode 10.
Yeah, that sounds statistically accurate to me.
That sounds very statistically accurate. That sounds like a statistic.
It sounds statistical because it had numbers in it.
Yeah.
And it had a decimal.
There was a percent. I said percent.
I'd buy a car from that statistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That we can trust it.
Yeah. It sounded like, wait, hold on. Confidence interval. Let's make this even more statistical.
All right.
Give me confidence interval.
50?
Awesome. Give me Z.
3.2?
Awesome.
3.2 squared. What's that? Okay. Like 9.
Somewhere between 9 and 16. It's like
somewhere, yeah.
Maybe 13-ish. I don't know.
We're moving slowly into the realm of cheerleading rather than statistics. Once you give a Z, then you have to give further letters.
Give me an O.
What's that spell?
Zo?
Zo?
That spells Zo.
I don't think... do we have a sport that has a Zo in it?
Actually, basketball, ironically enough. Alonzo Mourning.
There we go.
Zo. Is he a Zo?
Yes. Is he referred to as Zo?
Is that like Za, what the kids call the Za?
No, although I lost most of my faith in Scrabble when that sucker got in the dictionary. I'll tell you that much.
It's a terrible way to refer to a piazza.
Mike Piazza?
Yeah, or pretty much just Mike Piazza.
All right.
That's how I got in the Scrabble dictionary.
How do you spell paella? How many Y's are in that?
12.
All of them.
Hmm.
It's actually spelled Y. Why?
All the
why.
You can't have why's in other words.
Much like someone born in paella. Yes.
It sounds like
a
word.
A Russian instrumental?
Maybe. No, more like a yes, because yes has a Y in it.
No, but Rush has the one with the multiple Y's. The Y and the Z.
If you believe that, I mean, I don't. Paella sounds like a word that doesn't have any Y's in it.
Yeah.
But sounds like it has
I like that we've already covered Z and Z within the first 10 minutes or so of the podcast.
Also,
so we can alienate both audiences.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
We've gotten Z, we've gotten Y, we're
major
slowly
English
moving
speaking.
Backwards through the alphabet.
To be fair, to alienate an audience, you would first have to have one.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think...
That's why the show is, as you pointed out with your literary expertise, that's why the show is so important, because nobody's listening.
I really think having an audience is overrated.
It is. Mm-hmm. That's never been our goal.
Yeah. Honestly, we should be sort of unnecessarily cruel to you, so you stop listening after we've recorded this.
I don't work in academic.
I don't want you to listen to yourself, actually, your own show.
I hate hearing my own voice.
I want this to be so horrific for you that you don't listen. That way we can have that greater of an impact on you.
That would explain the props you've set up here.
Yeah, well, yeah. Those aren't... Props
implies that we won't use them.
Yeah,
later.
Or that they're fake and those aren't. But anyways, that's for the last segment.
That's quite sharp.
Anyways, but that was probably my favorite part of the show. The shows that we've done. What I wanted to ask you now, though, Dave, is a more abstract transcendental question. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite segment?
Walden Pond.
That's a good answer. But what is your
transcendentalism
favorite
joke? Continue.
What is your favorite segment that we haven't done yet?
Ooh, my favorite segment that we haven't done.
I'd stick with that answer, honestly.
This is a segment from our current podcast, I'm Trying to Think.
Right.
Not a segment from our future podcasts, Holy Shit, Giant Dollhouse, Conservatism and Causality, and The Ear Spoon and its uses.
Right.
I love that show.
Yeah, I would say actually...
You're going to love that show.
I'm speaking across
You will have loved that show.
You will always love that show.
Future subjunctive. But that was a nice touch of Big Brother in the future subjunctive.
Yes.
Nicely done. Anyhow, I think my favorite segment that we haven't done is probably the one where we talked about our brain problems.
Our brain problems?
Our brain problems.
You mean like, is this when we get brain cancer and start to just... because of our exposure to the chemical that we built to try and make ourselves superheroes?
No. Actually, this is the one we talked about, about the brain problems we already have. Although, the one you're talking about is my favorite segment we're going to do in about 3 months after the superhero thing sort of collapses
itself. Well, that's going to all occur because of what is my favorite segment is Let's Become Superheroes.
Yeah.
Great segment. Ends tragically.
Backfire.
Yeah, but it does bridge the early I'm Trying to Think with late I'm Trying to Think.
Let me ask you, Professor Zeleny, if something hasn't even happened yet, what is the impact level there?
At the time of it not happening, it's actually negative. Oh, but that's mostly because no one's heard of it, so it's a very strong impact, but it has yet to impact.
Wait, but what's so the negative impact? So is that like a
negative inverse exponent? I don't get the math.
I think that's where he's going, but I have a question of what's the negative impact before it hasn't happened?
I'll have to think on that. Once I figure it out, though, I won't be able to share it with you.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm really upset about a lot of things in my life.
That would be one of the brain problems. Haven't happened. Yes.
But when they don't happen, I'm a lot less upset. I have to admit, I think that's a source of stress in a lot of people's lives.
Is things that don't happen?
They're worried about the things because they haven't happened yet.
I don't know. If you want to talk about a real sort of weird subjunctive thing, I'm curious if this has ever happened to you or if I'm just insane.
Or if it's ever not happened to you.
Both could be true, but let's go forward with it.
But basically...
Yeah, that's, I believe, the logical fallacy of excluded middle.
Yes, it's not an exclusive committed. Or.
There's an and that could well be the case. But
all right, go ahead.
Have you woken up, like, I have woken up angry at people who don't exist for things they did in dreams.
Yeah, I know. I've done that, yeah, too.
That just seems, like, I just wake up like, oh, stock boy I'm yelling at the supermarket. Wait. No, there's no stock boy.
Usually it's
no supermarket.
Usually for me it's nothing. Greater injustices than stock boy at the supermarket.
No, see, that's the specific one I remember is stock boy at the supermarket.
Why were you upset at the stock boy that he didn't exist?
He was fucking up the checkout.
What did you have to do? You were dreaming. Were you trying to get somewhere important?
I don't remember.
He had to wake up. It's very important. He'd be late to everything.
It's the sort of fuzzy dream thing where you don't remember, but is stock boy checkout guy.
See,
he needed to be yelled at.
But here's a more important, possibly existential question.
Uh huh.
Waking up from a dream that you somehow became emotionally invested in it, would you rather wake up from a dream feeling angry for no reason, or feeling comforted and perhaps feeling happy for reasons that aren't true? But for reasons that...
Well, when you say for no reason, do you mean...
For reasons that don't exist, that only exist in the dream.
Reasons that are so
in the dream. Would you rather wake up angry because the stock boy dropped a can on your foot or whatever? I don't know why you're worried about stock boys, honestly.
Me neither,
who even sees a stock boy these days?
In fairness, I said, to be fair, to clarify, I said stock boy, I probably meant cashier.
Don't you buy all your food from Amazon or, you know, on the internet and have it delivered magically by the teleporters because you don't use... the United States Postal Service and et cetera anymore?
No, I usually have it. I usually go shopping, but instead of a shopping list, I have a brain.
Okay, look, that guy who wrote us that email is going to be angry. So let's get back to the actual topic I was proposing.
Okay,
would you rather be angry because the cashier can't check you out fast enough in the dream, which doesn't matter? Or would you rather wake up happy because, I don't know, you won the lottery or something in the dream that isn't real and never happened?
Well, you see, there's two things.
Because, here's the thing. Both have an opposite but non-equal reaction, which is you wake up angry, but you realize there's no reason to be angry, so you feel better. But if you wake up happy and you realize there's no reason to be happy, then you naturally would have to feel worse.
Sort of, then the world is empty.
A tinge of melancholy.
Yes.
It's a trick. It's either way. Because sometimes on the end, if you just wake up, then the trick is you can't remember why. Like, if you wake up in a good mood and you're lucky enough to not remember any sort of dream or why, just boom, you're up. It's a good mood.
Yeah,
you're happy, you know.
Yeah.
But if you remember why and you're like, oh, but that's not a thing.
Yeah, that is not a thing that happened, right?
Also, if you remember why, I know this happened to me, but do you ever get, usually I think this is confined to weekends, but if you've ever been late to somewhere because you're like, you know, that was awesome. You know, if fuck the actual world that exists. I'm going to try and see if I can sneak, like, a half hour or more.
Sneak back into that dream.
I would like to watch that again.
I know, I left, but I have the hand stamp. Can I come back in now? Yes. I've got the wristband. I was just in there. I left my phone inside. My girlfriend's still in there. She'll vouch for me.
And the dream bouncer is, of course, I'm sorry, man. I can allow you into this show here where there's a giant dog who's trying to eat your eyes, but not in a sexy way.
No, yeah. The dream bouncer is a horrible man. But anyways.
Professor Delany.
Yes.
Clarify the sexy way in which a dog eats your eyes.
Like in dreams. Really, I find tautologies are the best explanation for anything that I just read.
That's a fair answer, though, I have to admit.
Yeah,
There's no reason you can't have a complete, you know, dissociative relationship with what's actually occurring in your dream.
Yeah.
No, actually, there's no real reason you can't have a completely dissociative relationship with what's happening in real life. You just shouldn't.
Well, I'm not a psychologist, but I am curious. There is a reason, which is not having a dissociative disorder would be the reason.
Yeah. I'm curious about emotions in dreams. I often find it seems like the emotion happens first, and then the brain scrambles to fill in what the actual events that will cause said emotion are that you experience.
Who knows? We know so little about that.
I'm not a psychologist, but I am an expert. I would say you should... when's the last time you've had a CAT scan? Is just what I'm going to ask.
A sexy CAT scan?
Any kind.
I'm going to submit to you that we knew more about the human psyche, specifically with regards to dreams, when people were just making shit up about it. We knew a lot more then. Then we realized that those people had just made that shit up. Now, we don't know anything. No, I'm talking about dream interpreters, Freud, Jung.
Fit together so well.
Yeah, made up stuff.
Mm-hmm. Made up stuff, good textbooks.
Made up stuff fits together very well.
I mean,
actually,
you're having a dream because you want to have sex with your mother. Done.
Pow.
Game over.
Really, you can apply that to most things.
Actually, I mean, there you go. Segment over. There you go, because you want to have sex with your mom.
Did we just have the conversation about...
I'm Trying to Think is a podcast sponsored by the Foundation Institute. Find them online at foundation-institute.org. This episode of I'm Trying to Think was filmed in front of a live, sarcastic audience. The Foundation Institute. Planning for the future and tomorrow. And welcome back to I'm Trying to Think, episode 10. I'm Chuck Werner. With me, as always, is my co-creator, Dave Stern. And we have a special guest today, the author of the plays The Cliffs of Barker, The Life and Times of the Price is Right Yodeler, and Death of a Salesman 2, Loman's Revenge. We have Fred Zeleny with us.
Good to be here.
All right.
Okay, wait, quick clarification, because I was confused. When you called me your co-creator,
yes,
was that in that me and someone else created you? Because I don't remember that happening. There's a lot of timeline problems with that.
I'm referring to you. You and I co-created the show.
I thought this was a sudden retcon situation.
No. I'm just talking about the show.
Okay, because I was a little confused.
See, I always do the talking, so I assume that people know I was involved in the creation of the show. I was just trying to throw a little credit your way.
Which I appreciate.
It's a little...
I'm, as ever, hungry for credit.
Yeah, you're like the hyena. I'm like the lion. Yeah, I take the lion's share. And you're like the hyena. You come in, you take the scraps. It's good.
I'm not sure that... Let's go with it.
Fine. Yeah, okay, we'll go with that.
We'll just roll with that.
So, this segment, Dave has a topic. This is the recurring segment. Dave has a question for Chuck.
Yeah, this does happen. It's kind of like an etiquette question. So it's kind of that segment.
That's that segment that we talk about doing.
No, we did that segment several times.
Like several times. Yeah,
then we just put it on the shelf.
Did someone at the local paper actually cause this to be a problem?
No, this has nothing. This is not that segment.
So it's not Dave has a question about etiquette that comes from a guy that he hates at the local paper?
No. I think we're mashing shit together and calling it potatoes.
I like potatoes.
I don't like mashed shit.
That's fair.
This is important.
All right, go ahead.
This means something.
It requires
something.
Really good grace.
Ask your important mashed potatoes question.
Okay. Anyhow, so at this point, you know, in my life, I feel like I've sort of settled down solidly as a person, you know, with an existence. You know, basically, I've accepted that the job situation that I have is a reasonable one such that it continues giving me, you know, money to live as an adult.
All right.
That sounds reasonable. Now I feel like to be a decent human being, as someone with, like, you know, at least semi-legitimate adult income, I should start donating to charity. You know, I think that's, you know, morally a good thing to do. I think it's, you know, correct, and it's something that, you know, I should do.
All right, for purposes of this, we'll say that it is.
Okay. You...
In a capitalistic society, technically...
No, I'm not going to disagree. I'm just saying, you know...
Okay.
Well, in a capitalist society...
The last thing
society,
we need to do is argue about that.
Your pay actually directly relates to your worth as a human. And in other moral situations, how much you help others. So you're sort of doubling up on the worth.
Okay.
You're trying to increase your stock value.
Yeah. Anyhow, question is, though, thing I've noticed about charities, you know, I've started investigating, you know, I want to do this by the end of the year, you know, do something.
Give yourself a nice padding there.
End of the calendar year or fiscal year?
Oh, calendar year. I don't believe in fiscal years. I don't use the Fiscorian calendar.
I actually work on fiscal fortnights.
But anyhow, thing I've noticed about charities is there's a lot of them. And they are for every which a thing.
Yeah, there are probably at least 5 of them.
You know, I go up to, like, 12 in my research. I found, like, 12.
12?
Yeah.
I was unaware.
2 of them are actually the same.
But, you know, there's just so many variables. It's like, you know, do you help people in your area? Do you help people in worst off parts of the world? Do you give to specific political causes that you agree with, even though they, you know, may or may not be, you know, helping actual poor people? There's a lot of variables to consider.
You're troubled, I understand.
You know? So I just wanted help, advice, you know? Counsel.
I really think the best solution in this case is for us to think about what charity would we create if we were going to create a charity. Then you can just find the one that's
closest matches that.
Mm. Exactly. That's a genius idea, Chuck. Thank you, Chuck.
Oh, man.
I just think sometimes maybe the audience might not be able to tell that I'm talking, so I just thank myself, and they'll think that all the people in the show are real nice.
That's how that happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to say, you come up with it, he thanks himself.
As long as you don't, you know, dislocate your shoulder, pat yourself on the back, I think we're good. But I think that is...
I can do the podcast with a dislocated shoulder, okay? Look, I can do the podcast paralyzed from the neck down.
Well, we'd have to have some sort of charity to take care of you.
We do have to get a charity.
Honestly, the podcast might be better with the paralyzed from the neck down, because then you wouldn't be able to lean in and spike your mic.
That's true, but I like spiking my mic.
In victory, especially when he picks it up.
Mic.
Pow!
Mic and spike. I could spike my mic, literally.
Yeah, but anyhow, charity.
Charity.
You know, email a guy's gonna get mad because we're wandering. Oh
man, email a guy's gonna be so mad.
Joe
is gonna be angry. Email Joe. Email Joe is gonna send us another email about how we wander.
There's something about the name
with an O.
Yeah, there's something about the name Email Joe that suggests like internet access, but also one tooth.
He hates communism so much.
It's all an email.
What are you saying about poor Joe?
There's nothing about him personally.
Now you're insulting our listeners
it's just
again.
Name Email Joe. It just
listener.
Sounds to me like very
listener.
Much.
Listener,
it's
listener.
It's all Email Joe.
You're insulting our listener.
No, mostly I'm just insulting your nickname, mostly.
Okay, well, fine.
I'm saying it sounds hillbilly-ish.
I'm not saying that
internet.
You're not
a hillbilly. In that case, it would be Email Bill.
I don't really know if he is
email
a hillbilly.
Fine, Hill Joey.
Hill Joey. There we go. That's much better.
Okay.
That just sounds like he's in a pouch and he's a baby kangaroo. But
adorable.
You have a lot of problems with a lot of terms. They
That's
just make you
Joey.
Think of other stuff.
That's a hill, Joey. Okay, so charities.
Charities. The Hill Joey Foundation.
No.
Okay.
Okay.
So the Hill Joey Institute.
That doesn't solve my problem with the Hill Joey Foundation, honestly.
Okay. Your problem was the Hill Joey
I think we may need to contact a charity that is involved in naming charities.
Ooh.
A meta charity.
Actually.
You will.
I know that our friend, the literary expert, brought in the Foundation Institute requests that we bring in somebody
right.
who has some expertise, but he's not actually tied to the Foundation Institute.
No, so he probably doesn't know about
right,
the
that the Foundation Institute is actually one of their functions is to help name charities.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's part of their charity.
Yeah.
That's why they ask for donation adjectives every year.
That's why, yeah.
Yes. Because charities, I mean, they're usually real noun heavy.
Yeah, they are noun heavy.
But they've got nouns tied down.
Yeah, exactly. That's why they need adjectives, yeah, to help the people.
Oh, yeah.
So, what are you looking for, first of all? Do you want to walk down the street and not see poor people in front of you? Because then I would suggest we create a charity specifically to make sure the people who would be on your route or in your visibility are taken care of. So it really looks like your life is like you're living in a better world.
Getting people off the street. One, it's, you know, just the general, you know, getting, you know, the unfortunate off the streets is a good idea. And getting them off of the streets that I have to traverse makes it, one, it feels impactful to me because it's specifically designed to feel impactful to me.
Right.
To me, particularly.
You've got to be very careful.
And it just makes my commute more pleasant.
Okay.
You've got to be very careful how you define your goal there, because if the goal is just for him not to see them, they might actually go the, frankly, most cost-effective route of gouging out your eyes.
Or the cost-effective route of Hollow Man, you know, making an invisibility potion.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's... Huh. That's
it. But actually, I'd like to point something else out.
You just took the word, the phrase cost-effective, and used it to define a thing that, in my mind at least, is the opposite of cost-effective, in that something is very expensive.
Okay, 2 points. Point number one, your commute is, if I'm correct, from your shower to your couch.
Okay, we're not talking about my daily... Let's simplify and say it's my commute to the gym and back. Because right. I do that daily, and that's where I'm driving. That's,
okay. Point two...
It'd be so much easier to just clear all the...
When I say cost-effective, I'm including the fact that you get government funding to research the invisibility potion.
Right.
So,
that could be quite
practically free, right. It's practically free.
You could actually make a pretty good profit on this.
Yeah, all you need to do is actually find a way to make the government think that you could come up with an invisibility potion. And then probably actually come up with
one. Well, you could demonstrate where it is, of course, and then when they show up and it's not there.
But that's the real question is, do invisible homeless people, do the invisibly destitute constitute, you know, does that constitute charity?
No, I think what that constitutes more than charity, as I'm thinking about it, is I would call it the horrifically tragic literalization of a metaphor, is what I would call making the homeless invisible.
It is technically horrific.
Yeah, I see where you're going there. That is, I actually kind of created a metaphor that is true, and yes, equally horrific. Yes, okay, that is good. I'm glad we can all agree on that.
I'm not sure who it's more horrific for, the homeless or those who have things the homeless want.
Oh, man, if the homeless were invisible, they wouldn't be homeless for long.
You probably wouldn't even know when they had a home.
You wouldn't even know. You wouldn't know.
Except they'd stop being invisible.
Yeah, because they wouldn't be homeless anymore. That's only if you make a conditional invisibility potion.
Yeah, I think a conditional invisibility potion is much more difficult.
I think if you don't make a conditional invisibility potion, the homeless not only get homes, but if they are homeless and destitute, which, let's face it, they are. But if they're homeless and destitute, they probably stop being both of those things.
You don't find many homeless, well-off people.
That's true. That is true.
With the mortgages and the foreclosures, I'm not sure if that's true anymore.
You find a fair amount of destitute, homed people.
A large amount, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tragically. So do you want to fix all the destitute across the board?
I don't know. Honestly, now that our current idea became kind of tragic, so I'm wondering, do we want to fix this idea, or do we just want to go on a completely different path and move away from homeless charities altogether, because that might not be our forte.
Well, here's the thing.
Okay,
there's a lot of problems in this world, okay?
Yeah.
Number one, okay? You've got poverty, disease, kids dying, that's sad.
Yeah. War.
I guess,
war's no good.
War, famine.
Overpopulation, which you'd think would be solved by the other one.
Wait, but have we missed Horsemen of the Apocalypse yet?
Got war.
Okay, we did war, pestilence, famine. So
I guess
death is a problem.
We can go classic and also bring in conquest.
There's that British British or possibly Welsh guy, Aubrey de Grey.
The life extension guy?
Yeah, the life extension guy.
Ooh.
He's a computer scientist. Did you know that?
I think I did.
Yeah, he's like a computer scientist who is a hobby biologist and then wrote a book.
That always works out well.
Well, I mean, he's famous. B, people, I guess, kind of believe that he's right. And I don't see a reason to think he's not right.
Well, you know, he's not dead yet. Yeah. Once he's dead, he'll be proved wrong.
Well, that's true. That would be a very good life extension.
He might not be under the whole Dr. Atkins died fat principle. You know,
Death might not prove him wrong. He isn't saying he'll never die. He's saying that we could have stopped the aging process. But so here's, there you go, Dave. Would you rather you know, fix people who are dying now, or try to put your money forth so that no one would ever die again.
As a literary expert, I think I'd have to vote for people eventually dying, because, frankly, manuscripts by people that are dead sound much better.
That's a good point.
That's very true. Yeah, without death, authors will just remain poor.
Really, creators in general.
I don't want to sidetrack the conversation too much, because I know Joe is listening, but if, you know, deaths, an artist who dies can be worth a lot more than an artist who continues to live on. So I'm just asking Dave, when are you willing to make the ultimate sacrifice for I'm Trying to Think?
Okay, I'll give that answer quickly, but this germinated a charity idea in my head that I'm going to get back to. Because I think I figured out how to help a lot of people's careers and income situations.
But okay.
Anyway, that's the ultimate sacrifice thing. I'm thinking episode, like, maybe 63. But just in advance, I'm just going to lay this on you. It's going to be a murder-suicide.
Ooh.
Murder-suicide.
I recommend getting a good guest.
That could make the show very, very valuable. But no one wins in that situation.
Well, oh, no, the viewer wins. Well, listen.
Yeah, the viewer doesn't win because they just see a gory death.
Well, it also depends. Who do we want to track? Because if it's a murder-suicide, then what we're going to get is, like, the people who like G.G. Allen. You know, we're going to get that kind of person.
Oh, man,
like,
I don't know about those people.
Who's just like, oh, wow, that was totally an extreme. That guy killed someone on the thing. And, you know, then they'll get into
it. It's like the faces of death people, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but this is assuming, of course, that the
I don't want them.
This is assuming that the person you murder is, in fact, a person and not, say, a concept.
Just, it's like if the idea. If you murder comedy. The idea of it is good. But then the actual production, not so much. It's like a Dave Matthews concert. We've discussed that before. I like Dave Matthews. Don't like Dave Matthews people.
Same thing with Faces of Death.
Yeah.
Except I also
don't like Faces of Death. The concept is fine.
You like faces.
I like faces. The concept is fine. You know, conceptually, people die. I don't really have a problem with that.
Yeah, I need to see it.
It's not that I have any huge aversion to seeing it. More that I'd probably rather watch Full House.
Okay, so moving back,
Full House quite a combo.
Wrapping back around to the idea that this gave me is
Full House is not far off from Faces of Death. Let's be honest.
Yeah, here's how we save art and solve the homeless problem.
Uh oh.
Okay, it's a simple charity program.
Uh oh.
This is good. I can see.
I'm not sure what the name would be. It's, you know, something along the lines of
Faces of Death.
No, but it would be like Artist Bum Exchange or like, you know. Pairing artists.
So art bum do. Exchange? Aren't most artists already bums?
No. Quite.
They're slumming. They're not actually the homeless most part. You know?
It's simple. We already have something like this, but we just work in the homeless and we could have the hobo arts.
No, but let me explain. Ball. Let me explain. Here's what you do. You pair, you know, you get an artist. You give him maybe, like, you assign, like, 5 to 10 homeless people to that artist. The artist's will is written with those homeless people in it. Those homeless people help him. Like, you know, they give him a little inspiration. You know, they tell him about their hardscrabble lives to help him produce. And, you know, him or her, whatever. But I'm just using him for discussion, you know. But they help him produce great art. Then they kill him.
And then
with his death. Yeah. His art, he becomes famous, it's notable. It goes, shoots up the bestseller list. Those homeless are off the street.
Okay.
Then they
have two problems. One, the murder could be a problem.
Okay.
We could do it offshore, then less of a problem.
That's going to eat into your profits.
It is going to eat into the, not profits here. This
Please,
is
that's going to eat into our
non-profits. It's going to eat into the non-profits. So, that could be a problem. You could maybe work with some legislators, but then you have to hire lobbyists. Suicide is far better because it's illegal.
Yeah, I mean,
but
it doesn't,
who cares?
It doesn't it's have also, to be a murder.
It's also
it, I'm just saying the artist goes.
It goes.
It doesn't have to literally be killed by our homeless.
That's what I mean. I don't think the homeless should have to engage in murder. That's really going against the charity thing.
Yeah, that's not helping them so much as, you know,
scarring. I would say possibly we shouldn't even inform the homeless of the ultimate fate of the artist.
Yeah, I think eventually they'll catch on.
I'm thinking that maybe this may be the first call for sort of an underground charity, where we make things good for people without letting them know that we're really trying to make things good for them.
So, like vigilantism.
Like vigilantism.
Except we're murdering artists.
Hey.
Like getting vigilantism. Artists to kill
and
themselves.
And the homeless people don't know. That's kind of how it goes.
So then how do we... Do we have, like, an above-ground part that brings them together and facilitates, you know...
helping these... That you get a sense of purpose in your life and just a direction by pairing you up with someone who's creative, giving you an outlet for your own creativity.
But for your own...
And then he's dead.
But for your own comfort, don't get too close.
Yeah, don't get too close.
Yeah, well, I think that's... I mean, the homeless are often...
These artist types. You never know.
Well, also... I mean,
actually always know.
A lot of the homeless are homeless due to sort of, you know, imbalances, you know, the whole Reagan deinstitutionalization kind of thing.
So right.
I feel like the not getting too close will probably take care of itself.
That's possible.
In a lot of situations.
It's possible, actually, yes.
We might have to work to get them close to begin with so that they can actually share their
experiences. We're losing our nonprofits. We're spending them in the wrong places. Okay, maybe this whole idea is...
I know a way to make more nonprofits off of this and then fund it back into the original televised.
We're definitely... going to have to, we're back to Faces of Death. We're definitely going to have to be more of a guerrilla charity. Because also...
Oh, so do you want to, like, pair with Diane Fossey? Or is this, like, the guerrilla?
Guerrilla. The French guerrilla.
Okay. I don't see a reason it can't be both.
How many
homeless guerrillas do we have?
I do.
I hear it's an epidemic.
The problem really is that pairing the homeless up with guerrillas could really end poorly.
Here's the thing, is there even an artist at this point
if we swap them out with gorillas in the plan completely?
Yeah, I don't see how we're going to afford artists and gorillas.
Well, we can save money by having them be artistic.
Artists, gorillas, lobbyists, you're cutting deeply into our nonprofits.
Also, and when a gorilla dies, what gets sold, you know?
Yeah, nobody wants gorilla paintings.
There's no paintings
right.
to sell. There's no book.
Maybe if we could make the gorillas talk,
you know,
but then again,
bestseller,
we have to invest
you know,
in that.
No one's writing the 5 gorillas you meet in heaven.
Right. Is anybody writing anything about the people you meet in heaven?
I'm pretty sure that's like a book.
It might be about self-help or some...
Chicken soup for the 5 people you'll meet in heaven who know the secret.
It's some religious thing. I don't know. I'm pretty sure there's a number of people in heaven, and you meet them, and it inspires you or something. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure the 5 people are... Well, you got your Gandhi.
No, the 5
he's,
people...
He's, I'm afraid to inform you, my friend. Gandhi was a Hindu.
Oh, no, he broke in.
Ergo, no heaven.
He staged a hunger strike to get in, and eventually they caved.
Now, if I remember the book correctly, which I may or may not, because it may not even be 5 people, but I'm pretty sure the 5 people you meet in heaven are God, Jesus, Boris Karloff,
Are you sure it's Boris or is it Bela Lugosi? Because hear he's dead.
It's Boris Karloff. Okay. I've read the book. I haven't read the book.
5 people you meet in heaven is actually a work of fiction.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
What?
And you meet the guy actually meets a lot more than 5 people. So
one of them had better be Virgil.
I don't know.
Wait,
that's
wrong
a different
side.
That's a different thing.
One of them is the captain, but none of them is Tennille. So
does he make it?
You
happen?
Know which way that party split when they got to heaven.
That's why Tennille shouldn't have, you know,
made all that muskrat love. If you know what I mean.
Yeah,
that is against the Bible, friend. That is against.
I remember that.
That is
against
it. If you want to know,
I barely know what that
it's
means.
Right there with the shelter.
Do you know who's really pissed off right now?
No,
Joe. Email.
Oh.
Wait, email Joe. It really works either way.
Hill Joey.
It works either way. Hill Joey.
Now he's okay with it because we did bring it back.
Yeah, we brought it back around. But the charity here, okay, the problem with artists is we have no guarantee that all dead artists are going to, you know, be worth a lot of money after they're dead. We only know that
we have to pool it.
Dead artists.
Like,
it's like we have to do the...
No, it's got to be insurance. You know?
Yeah, we got to play the odds.
In aggregate.
It's like
profits in aggregate.
It's like an artist default swap. So yeah. you aggregate them together, and then you have to figure out how to bet against some artists.
And we can wholesale it to the homeless.
And we can wholesale the remainder art.
Right, right. So the question, so then we're helping homeless people, but what we've left to, who we've left to die, children with weird diseases, those are the all those Jerry kids, diseases. Diabetes.
Well, you know,
I mean, it's...
We can't solve all the problems.
I think we can. That's what we need to figure out. The key. The key to solving all the problems.
Okay, is that what you want to focus charity? Do you want to junk the whole artist thing and just go with a general charity of just give us money to solve all the problems?
Give us money, and we're going to go out. We're going to look at all the problems. We're going to categorize them. We're going to write them down.
Maybe okay. even make an equation or two.
We're going to write them down. There'll be a product at the end. You can read a book that we wrote about the stuff that we wrote down when we looked at the problems. And mostly we would just go from place to place and live off the dime of the charity.
Okay, so this would be...
Wait, did I... Are we still recording?
Oh. Oh, I yeah. think...
Yeah, we are. Ooh. That's...
That was a joke. It was. That was me being funny.
God, if only we had some way of editing things.
That was me.
Funny for humor.
That was me being funny for humor. And
okay, so I think the laughs. Last thing we got to settle down then is, what's the name of our charity? I'm thinking at this point it's the Problem Society?
The Problem Society the problem Foundation. People. The Problem People. Possibly yeah, the Problem People is good. Yeah. The Trouble okay. People.
The Trouble People, definitely.
The Trouble People, yeah.
The Trouble People's different.
Is it?
I don't know. Have you mentioned that on the podcast? Was that you?
Oh, that was not me. I believe the expert at the other end of the table has a story.
That's convenient. The person who actually that happened to is on the other end of this. But I think we're about ready to take a break.
That'll be a story for episode 63 during the murder-suicide.
During the murder-suicide.
All right.
We'll talk about the Trouble People. But the Trouble People Institute Foundation, that is what we're going to name okay. our charity.
TPIF.
Different thing. TPIF, yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's like TGIF.
Yeah.
But it's Thank Problems It's Friday.
And the wings are cheaper.
Wings are way cheaper.
Here's a fact you cannot rise above. We'll have problems, yeah, then we'll have bigger ones. Oh.
From damage to damn. And welcome back to episode 10 of I'm Trying to Think. I'm Chuck Werner. With me, as always, is my co-host, Dave Stern. Later on in the show, we will be we'll have an interview with the Ship of Theseus, followed by an interview with the new Ship of Theseus. But first, we want to reintroduce our special guest, acclaimed author of the novels Love in the Time of Sleep Apnea and The Ice Cream Man Cometh, Fred Zeleny.
Hello there.
Our expert on... literature here. You have a question for us, experts of I'm Trying to Think, and we would like to go forward with that for this next segment.
As experts on Think and Thinkology, I was wondering exactly what your philosophical and otherwise takes on postmodernism. I was wondering what they were.
Postmodernism.
That's basically tackling, amongst other things, it is a subject that has actual definitions. But it's also just the biggest bullshit word of our time.
Oh, it's got
so many people who don't understand it as a thing. They'll use it in place of when they want to use the word new, but they want it to sound cool. They'll use it in place of the word ironic. They'll use it in place of the word douchebaggy.
I first want to establish, I am not a postmodernist, okay? I have some views which people may think... come close to postmodern views, but I want to make it clear that I'm not a postmodernist, so I'm going to end a lot of statements with my disclaimer, no pomo. For instance, I do feel there is a relative aspect to morality, no pomo.
Right, or, you know, for example, I think sometimes the relationship between the signifier and signified gets disrupted. No pomo.
No pomo.
That kind of thing?
Right. Sometimes okay. the recipient or the reader of a message does have certain rights in determining its meaning. No pomo.
Also, I've got to say, I like stopping alongside the highway for a cheap but decent night's sleep and a filling pancake breakfast, no Hojo.
No Hojo. So, moving forward with postmodernism, though, Dave, why don't you define postmodernism? Because I'm not going to. No FOMO.
Well, postmodernism is something that has different definitions but across all the different fields.
I refuse to define postmodernism. No FOMO.
Of course.
Okay. Because the thing about postmodernism, in my mind at least, is it kind of cuts across a lot of sort of disciplines, you know, intellectual disciplines, artistic disciplines. Like, there are certain disciplines where the sort of strict definition of it is, I think, relatively straightforward, in that, for example, in a lot of artistic and literary, you know, architecture, design, literature, art, there was a period of, you know, a particular, you know, fashion in that art called modernism. Then, despite what many of those modernists usually thought, they didn't, you know, find the right thing such that all progress in history and their art was ended and everything was just like they wanted it to be forever. A thing turned out to come after that.
It's a mistake.
Right. It was a reaction against that.
It's a mistake they keep making throughout the ages.
Yeah,
throughout the ages.
Basically, a lot of the sort of movements that called themselves modernism had the same problem.
They never let it go.
That I would say
never going
that
to
Hegel had
up.
Actually, where Hegel was like, through a, you know, careful analysis of philosophy and history, you realize that the perfect everything is living where I live in Prussia and coming up with the philosophy of Hegel.
Yeah, I mean
that's why.
To be fair, he was right.
It's a good way to knock off work for the day.
It's a good way to just finish a book.
I do miss Prussia. So yeah. He had a point. But that's also the reason why my favorite philosophers of it's why my favorite philosopher of the early 19th century is Hegel. And then my favorite philosophers of the late 19th century all violently and angrily make fun of Hegel.
Violently and angrily?
Yeah.
Candide is pretty violent.
That's making fun of Leibniz. But
curses.
No, Nietzsche hated Hegel. Kierkegaard hated Hegel.
A lot of Hegel hate.
Schopenhauer, who was more of a contemporary, but still hated Hegel.
Yeah, did not like Hegel.
Yeah, there's... Basically, if you're a philosopher in the 19th century in Europe at that time, you're either Hegel, Marx, who was actually kind of a disciple of Hegel, or you hate Hegel.
Thank you for the Marx throwing in there. That's,
I guess a couple people think he turned out to be important.
Just ruining your whole point, which was, I liked your point, and then you brought Marx into it, and
he exists, you know. A couple people may still pay attention to some of his philosophies. I guess you have to acknowledge him a little bit. But anyhow, wrapping around to the point that we're talking about with postmodernism and modernism, basically,
and how much you would love Hegel, apparently.
Yeah. Modernism just has that point. I love Hegel and I love hating Hegel. They're both great, but anyhow, it's
which
that point.
Which is itself relatively postmodern.
No, actually, that's Hegelian, you know.
That is Hegelian,
It's the thesis and the antithesis. I've created a synthesis.
He has synthesized it, yes.
I love Hegel and Hegel Hayden.
I was going on more, I guess, the literary artistic definition, which is rather separate.
Yeah,
no
that
FOMO.
Sort of contradiction.
No FOMO.
Yeah, that sort of holding simultaneously of contradictory ideas.
There are several definitions of postmodernism. All are accurate to a degree.
Oh,
no FOMO.
But yeah, they all, I mean, it depends on, you know, what the specific, you know, what modernism was and the specific, you know, discipline that it's reacting to.
And they're all listed poorly on Wikipedia, which is itself constantly re-edited by people who don't understand those definitions, which is extremely FOMO.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Wikipedia is basically a rhizome in which any reader who wants can, dictate its meaning. No FOMO. Actually, that's pretty FOMO.
That's about as FOMO as you can get.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, the user Republican Jacobite.
Oh, good.
Is one of the primary contributors to the postmodernism.
Those are not the same. Those are two extremely different political movements.
I enjoy. It's, again, synthesis and
no, but that's not thesis even close. Basically, that's not even thesis and antithesis. That's basically like thesis and purple.
Yeah, thesis and
purple. Those are two things that really don't have a lot to do with each other.
All right.
It's like thesis and grapefruit.
That's not a logical opposite. That's an illogical opposite.
It's not even
or
opposite.
Skew,
it's just two
even.
Things that are in a vaguely similar category.
Logical opposites will have to come later for Bizarro talk.
I don't want to dwell too much on Republican Jacobite.
I don't know, but I assume they support capitalism and restoring the King of Scotland to the English throne.
Obviously. No.
I think you're misunderstanding. This is just Republican Jacob, and his last name is Eight.
The first sentence of his background portion on his user page is, I am an American science fiction writer.
Oh, it's probably Orson Scott Card.
Orson Scott Card, probably, yeah. Are there any other Republican science fiction writers?
Harry Turtledove, I would guess, is a Republican. Because he sure likes giving the South guns.
You also have to guess that he's a science fiction writer. just some sort of... I don't know how many times we've talked about Harry Turtledove on this show, but it's important to talk about him.
I think this is number two.
Because I think it might be three. But regardless...
We might be running a streak.
Regardless, it's important to talk about Harry Turtledove because he loves to rewrite history.
We did interview him for the Robot Lincoln segment.
Yeah, Robot Lincoln is sort of... Turtledove knows his Robot Lincoln stuff.
Did we get that interview?
Yeah, we got that interview. We had to cut it for time, though.
Have I already forgotten that we had always had that interview?
Yes.
So now you did.
Okay.
We've always been at war with East Turtledove.
All right, cool. So, what I would define postmodernism as is... No, Pomo. I actually can't. I'm not gonna. I'm just not gonna.
So your definition is, in fact, a refusal to define it.
Which is possibly
one of the more true definitions there is out there.
Here's the fun thing about postmodernism as a word. When somebody says, that is postmodern, I then actually have the task of defining what it means because they are referring to something.
Yeah, the question is,
and
what
I would like
they
to communicate
mean.
With
yeah,
them,
the
right?
The question is, what do they
They have
mean?
Actually just been postmodern because they've used, as Dave was, mm-hmm. Throwing in some linguistics terms, but they're using a signifier that has no signified in my brain.
Yes.
They might as well say breadbox submarine.
Yeah, that's true. It just doesn't.
Tube. I have to think about what they actually mean.
So often, very empty.
Right. Sometimes they mean post-structuralist. Sometimes they mean postmodern feminism. Too often they mean postmodern feminism. For my tastes. But, and if if you don't know what postmodern feminism is out there, folks, don't read about it.
I'm going to go the opposite way, and I'm going to recommend that, because I hate people, that they read the least making sense. Like, it's not even something that, like, offended me intellectually, it's just the least, because I didn't comprehend it. But read Helene Csikszentmihalyi, anything she's written.
Yeah, really... Yeah.
No, because you want to get the French 70s thing, because that's one, it's very sort of postmodern, it's post-structuralist, feminist, literary theory, and it also has the bonus that because it's European in the 70s, it still is that part where, like, the French and European sort of continental philosophers still had a hard-on for Freud, so it's also real Freudian and, like, Lacanian to a certain extent, too. It's bizarre.
You can go back
and read
the Simone de Beauvoir.
Well, no, that's just first wave reasonable feminist. I got no beef with de Beauvoir.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? She's like a huge Foucault fan, and you just get these like...
No, she was in most of her stuff is in the 50s. Most of her stuff was like contemporary with / banging Sartre.
Yeah, but it...
I mean, did she develop
we'll talk about this
kind
later.
Of thing later? I
we'll
don't
talk
know.
About this later.
That's good, because I'm actually getting an email from Hill Joey.
Yeah. Hill Joey's upset already because we've refused to define postmodernism.
He's remarkably ahead of his time. We haven't released this yet.
Not my fault.
He's good. He's very good.
I think he just really knows us.
I just think that the whole thing is
really if you set up a cron,
it's like it's people who read Nietzsche and then don't get the good parts out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I can sympathize with him because, man, Nietzsche's hard.
You know what
is even
worse, though? Actually, the worst postmodernists are the people who have never read Nietzsche and don't even know what he says.
Yeah.
Those are the worst ones.
Now, see, I'm coming at it from a very different angle because in terms of fiction and art and literature and so forth, postmodernism will usually, and not always, but usually refer to something that is much more conscious and aware of the media and aware of its traditions and builds upon other people's creations in the past.
Yes, it's like a self-aware artistic style. I understand that definition
of it. You get your House of Leaves, so forth, yeah.
He has got that more sort of post-McLuhan, no pomo, but using the medium more as a message.
But it's generally a much less offensively obtruse definition.
Yeah, that's some of the artistic definitions, I think. I mean, people will still just call random shit postmodern, and they don't know what they're talking about. But the actual artistic definitions are easier to wrestle with than I think some of the philosophical definitions, because you have, like, again, the post-structural thing. And here's actually something that I've always found interesting about post-structuralism.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to ask you a question, and if you have a clear answer for me, then you're lying.
All right.
Delineate the difference.
Good setup. Thank you.
Delineate the difference between structuralism and post-structuralism.
I'm ready to go. All right. Here we go. Ready?
Sure.
Oh man. Okay. Structuralism. Okay. I've figured this out in the past, and it has to do with the difference between historical and descriptive views. I'm talking about post-structuralism when you're interpreting like literature and stuff. It all has to do with the message being interpreted either as being put in the work by the writer or drawn from the work by the reader. Mm-hmm. So structuralists, you know, it was the way of things, and it's all confused by things like Foucault being a post-structuralist who says he's not a post-structuralist and all that kind of crap that causes all sorts of confusion here. But yeah. Basically, the traditional definition, a traditional way to interpret literature was that the writer had a meaning and he was putting it into the work. Post-structuralism says, A, it's more important what you read from the work than what was put into it, and B, the writer may not even know what he's putting into the work.
But what does structuralism say, and how does that differ from post-structuralism? I think that's where people get really confused.
Structuralism is the, like I said, historic, meaning like it's in there. It's all, the truth was there. The truth is still there. Whereas, post-structuralist is about the truth that you draw from it. There is no, that it's a relativism thing too. Okay. It's a relativism thing. Like the truth is not inherent in the piece. The truth comes from us reading it.
But that's definitely, it's a fuzzy divide between the two.
Well, it's easy to like transfer from one to the other.
Barthes was a structuralist, but a lot of his ideas sound post-structuralist.
Exactly. That's where the confusion comes up.
It's messy.
Yes, it's extremely. It's not a we nice, just spent clean like break. I just spent like 3 or 4 minutes explaining something
and
that no,
no
one
no
cares
closer
about.
To an answer.
Right,
oh,
and
no,
no
closer
pomo.
To an answer. No, no pomo.
But they could take something much more interesting out of it, and we could sell that.
And that would be, but that would be post-structuralist. I don't want to be post-structuralist either. No post-stro. The other problem with postmodernism is that it gets into crazy side concepts like post-humanism. For people who say humanism is coming to an end.
Wait, is post-humanism, is that like transhumanism?
It's like transhumanism.
Because I know there's transhumanism where it's like the nerds who think we're going to become like information robot beings. It's basically transhumanism.
I think this is mostly
humanism, transhumanism.
Wait, anti-humanism is when there's like a something. I don't read the Flash much. It's something about a super intelligent gorillas.
I thought it was anti-humanism is when you favor the aliens over.
Anti-humanism is
like
when
if you're watching
the exact opposites, like Bizarro.
If you're watching Close Encounters,
you're a literary expert. Tell me, the anti-humanite, is that one of the surprisingly several super intelligent gorilla enemies that the Flash has? I want to say the anti-humanite is an evil super intelligent gorilla.
I think he's actually the pet human, ironically enough, of Gorilla Grodd.
Huh.
The anti-humanist, yeah.
Well, we've learned something today.
Anti-human
it may even be true.
Anti-humans have a problem specifically with drawing certain meaning from anthropology.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, it's
good for them.
You know.
You know,
wait, I think we can be more dismissive if we try, but we might have to get a running start.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to start three rooms away for that.
Yeah. Okay, at this point, I think we're deep in a thicket. Do we want to try and draw some sort of point out of this and wind it to a close?
Kids, I know you're out there. You're a teenager. You're thinking, hey, I want to be a grown-up. I can make my own decisions. I can be a responsible person. I can handle postmodernism. I can talk about art and literature and talk about my own, putting my own sort of framework on top of something. I can talk about how Dracula is actually about how Dracula is gay. Or I can talk about how, you know, Dracula is cyberpunk.
Maybe you've been lured into it by the mashup scene.
Right. But let me tell you, kids, that is not something you want to mess with, okay? Pretty soon, you're going to be thinking that culture is a construct that does not develop and is a stagnation of one generation that holds back the next. You're going to start thinking that morality is purely an invention of these cultures, that it has no intrinsic value, that there is no such thing as truth, that beauty is a relative mark of something. These are not concepts that you want to deal with at an early age, okay? These are things that are dangerous, as dangerous as cocaine, and much less fun. So I just want to say, kids, say no to postmodernism.
It always seems so sad when you see someone fall for it.
That's just... I mean,
also, while we're lecturing children, I'm going to say, green beans taste better than you think they do. Just put a little butter on them. Just eat the beans. Just eat the beans.
Yeah, stay away from soda, kids.
I will, however, warn... Brussels sprouts? No. Just
yeah, the Brussels sprouts.
Save yourself the time.
I don't know who's cooking these things and growing them, but they need to stop. And this has been episode 10. Of I'm trying to think. Dave, did you have a good time?
I did. You know, we talked about, you know, some of the retrospective. We talked about a couple of our favorite moments. We didn't dig too much into detail of it, but I'll tell you why I like that. Because here's the thing. I'm Trying to Think is not a show about looking backwards at the past. We are not resting on our laurels. We are, you know, minimally autofillating, you know, due to the great work we've done. We did it. It's in the can. We move on.
I do want to apologize to the Ghost of Robot Lincoln.
Had to bump him.
Got bumped. Porkman Gilly, sorry, bumped. The Ship of Theseus and the New Ship of Theseus. Actually, in the new Ship of Theseus, we already had it set up an interview. But we're just not going to have time.
Maybe we can just interview one of them.
You can't do that, Dave. It just doesn't work.
Or can you?
No, you can't. You can never figure out which one it is.
It's all. All
right, look. I also need to apologize to Dave's imaginary friend, Polonius the Shoemaker, who we had to bump also. But thank you to Fred Zeleny, for our literary expert this week, for coming on and helping us figure out exactly the impact of our show on today's society and yesterday's society.
And, of course, on the society that doesn't quite exist but might have.
The society we're worried about not existing.
That would exist if we didn't do the show.
Yeah, the society that may not have existed, but will have not existed later.
Yeah. We're also going to... I mean, we're going to have to go off air to talk about that portmanteau of Fool and Duck, but that's all right. So, from our lovely Pittsburgh studios, I'd like to thank you all for giving us 10 great episodes.
I just got the joke. It's dull. That's funny.
I'd like to thank all you people out there for getting us through these 10 episodes. Here's to 10 more.
That's not an ambitious goal.
That's the type
I like to keep things realistic. Thank you, and good night.